Hi there and good evening. Welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Online, you'll find us at jimbohannonshow.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JimboTalks. Much is said about higher education these days, and not all of it is positive, to say the least. Complaints of bias in the professorial ranks, complaints about violations of free speech, and of course the accelerating cost. I'm not sure if any sector of the American economy can compete with the higher education, except maybe healthcare, when it comes to inflation. All of that having been said, American colleges and universities every year do turn out an awful lot of graduates who become, for the most part, the creme de la creme of our society, the leaders who will carry us through an increasingly competitive 21st century. And the positive side of the coin is told in a new book, College Success Stories That Inspire. It is told by our guest. He is Stephen Roy Goodman, an international authority on college and graduate school admissions. Over the past 20 years, Steve has designed admission strategies for more than 1,800 applicants to colleges, graduate programs, and business, law, and medical schools. It's good to have you with us tonight, Steve.
Well, thank you, Jim. Good to be here.
Absolutely. College Success Stories That Inspire is published by Miniver Press, and I'm curious if you could give us just an outline, an overview of what you're saying and what you have compiled in this book.
Well, first of all, again, thank you for having me on
Sure.
your show. But I think the real thrust of the book is that you can experience college life to the fullest, regardless of which university you go to, what major you have, or what activities you do, because the truth is that the real thing that points to college success is what you personally do on campus. And that it would be great if we could all go to Harvard. It would be great if we could all have 4.0s. It would be great if we could all have triple majors and be on full scholarship. But at the end of the day, what we really need to do is give students the freedom to explore what they like and then to give them the paths to go and do that. And I think what the book does, and I hope what it does, is explain to families and students and other people interested in higher education that there are different paths and different ways to have students succeed.
Fair enough. My parents were thrilled to learn about my 4.0 until they discovered that it was my blood alcohol level. That fact notwithstanding, we take a look at this collection of essays. Who wrote these various essays that you've compiled in the book, College Success Stories That Inspire?
Well, a lot of people. Basically, a number of people contributed to this book, quite a few people. There are 99 people who contributed to this book, to be exact, many of whom are former students of mine, some of whom are colleagues of mine in different ways, other people are people who I reached out to who I thought had interesting stories to tell, either on the negative or the positive side, as you alluded to at the beginning of the show. I mean, not everything about higher education is positive. Many things are, but of course, there are a lot of things that aren't. And some people had difficult experiences that they overcame. Other people had simple experiences. Other people had complex experiences. And the stories in the book really, in my view, capture the essence of some of those experiences, whether they talk about mistakes that you overcame and revisited, or something as simple but powerful like a teacher or mentor who changed my life.
My wife was the admissions director at two predominantly women's colleges, Stevens College of Columbia, Missouri, and Chestnut Hill College in Philadelphia. She always told students that they are consumers, and that they should shop, and they should do so by, frankly, comparing what they're paying out with what they're getting back. And that if you were to take on what these days, of course, it's quite easy to take on six figures worth of personal debt, you'd better be getting something back for that.
Well, I agree with your wife. I mean, I think that that's exactly right. And the way that you get something back is you have to get something from the university that's going to carry you in the long run. And that thing can be something like, well, it can be a job, of course, but it can also be a way of thinking. It can be a way of discovering what it is that you truly love. It can be a relationship with a roommate or a friend that carries on for your entire life. Now, of course, your wife, if she were here joining us right now, might say, well, you know, what's the value of that friendship with your roommate? That's harder to quantify than a job in downtown Los Angeles or downtown Chicago. But nonetheless, I think it's very important. But yes, I do agree with your wife that as consumers, we should be looking at what is a university going to help you do. But I would say, if I may, that it's not just what the university can do for you, but it's what you can do for yourself, because a lot of this is about what you're going to do and what how you can go forward and explore what you like to do, and the responsibility for learning, as one of the people in this book very clearly said, is not necessarily the university professors, but it's you, the student.
Yeah, it's not just a case of you being an empty vessel, like, let's say, a recycled Coca-Cola bottle, and you're sent back to the Coke factory, and as you pass underneath the spigot, the bottle is filled with Coca-Cola, or you are automatically filled with a shot of knowledge. It's not quite the same thing. You may be, in some regards, an empty vessel, but in this particular case, the bottle, that is to say, you must do your part. You can't just passively sit there while the knowledge is squirted into your brain.
That's a very good point. And it's, in fact, an excellent point. I think that's an excellent point. I don't have much more to say about that than you're 100% right about that.
And again, it's not just knowledge as well. I mean, it is fine and good that one learns that in 1492 Columbus sailed the ocean blue and all the rest of those little facts that we learned, and the idea that you should go to any extended period of formal education and not come away with some facts, I think would be kind of unrealistic. However, in this day and age, of course, with the body of knowledge changing so quickly and the amount of information just increasing logarithmically, you must simply face the fact that if you go to the finest school in the country, let's say you're talking about a career in something related to science, technology, engineering, math, the STEM disciplines, and you go to an MIT or a Caltech and you get your degree, let's say next year, let's say 2019, by 2024, 5 years hence, much of what you have learned may well be obsolete. That's just the nature of today's body of knowledge. There was a time when you could graduate from college with a certain body of knowledge and be fairly certain that it would stand you in good stead for the next 40-some years. I don't guess that's true anymore, is it?
Well, that's true, but I think sometimes you have to think a little bit more broadly, if I may, in that some of the grander things that you're getting from college are things that are more that are going to carry with you beyond the 5-year period or 10-year period. For instance, somebody in the book who went to the University of South Carolina talked about one of the courses that he took in broadcasting, and the biggest lesson that he learned as a young person was that he had to be on time, and that there was no such thing as simply coming 5 minutes late. And now you might say, well, do you really need to go to college to learn that lesson? But for him, that was a key lesson that carried him forward for his career. And I think there's a value to that.
There is a value to it, and I would thoroughly concur. Of course, the question asked is a valid one. Do I really need to go to college to learn this? And I would add one more. Do I really need to get over $100,000 in debt to learn that it's important to be on time? You know, if you happen to pick up something like that while you're in college, well, good. We'll consider that bonus points. But if it really takes 6 figures of indebtedness for you to learn that, I don't think that's a bargain. I mean, you could learn that just by working as a barista at Starbucks and them telling you that's the third time this morning, this week that you've come in late, you're fired. The lesson would be learned and it would cost you whatever Starbucks is paying you. It would not cost you that amount of indebtedness that may take the bulk of your adult life to pay off. That's what I guess I was talking about earlier when I spoke of the fact that it takes a lot of money to attend college for most people, unless you're very rich or very poor. And again, not everything is worth that amount of money.
Well, that's a very fair comment, and I think as a society we're struggling with this very issue, because as you alluded to before, as knowledge changes and accelerates in terms of the changes, it's not 100% clear what the value is of what we learned yesterday morning at, let's say, 10 in the morning compared to the day before at 10 in the morning. Because if you can just look at your phone and get any fact you want about whether it's 1492 or anything else, then the real question about a college education is, it, are you going there to get facts, or are you going to a college in order to think more clearly? And I would argue that the thinking is quite important. And if I may give you an example, one of the people in our book from Knox College in Illinois, which is, I think, a very fine but not as well-known college as some of the other colleges in the country that are in the book, one of the students who's now an author himself, he wrote about how he wrote his first college paper and got a C-plus on it because he concluded that Plato was unrealistic. And his he went storming into his professor's office and said, how could I possibly get this kind of grade? Because didn't you realize that I was the editor of my high school newspaper in such and such town, and how could I get a C-plus on a paper? And, of course, he's telling the story about how he learned to think. And so that gets to your question before about, serving burritos. Well, there's nothing wrong with serving burritos, but this student benefited greatly from learning to think more clearly when he went to university.
Fair enough. More to come. 1-866-50-JIMBO. College success stories that inspire, written by our guest, Steve Goodman, 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. We'll be back in a moment. Yes, indeed, graduates of the class of 2018, go forth. Remember that the future lies ahead. And other cliches, which I, in fact, have delivered in two commencement addresses that I've given. We're talking tonight with Steve Goodman, the author of College Success Stories That Inspire, Lessons from Inside and Outside the Classroom. We were talking some about the actual rationale for this four-year and multi-thousands of dollars experience. I have put forward a thought on this program that it might be appropriate at this time to address, I suppose, and that would be that while certainly there are any number of reasons why individuals go to school, government has only one vested interest, and that is that you become productive citizens. And to the extent that people go to school and, let's say, major in Etruscan literature and wind up being the most literate barista at Starbucks, that was a waste of any government money given to you. That, in fact, I believe that student aid should be directly proportional to the percentage of people in a given major who wind up with the full-time employment in that major within, let's say, a year of their graduations. Otherwise, if you want to find yourself, do it on your own dime, would be my take. And I note in conclusion that there is a reason why there are so many bowling leagues in this country, and that is because a lot of people like to bowl and would love to be a part of the Professional Bowling Association, but they're not good enough, and they have what we call a hobby. But during the week, they have a real job and presumably the skills necessary to acquire that job. And if you happen to have a passion in higher education that is not going to pay you, then I think you need to start considering it a hobby and get yourself a career. Is that too drastic an approach, Steve?
Well, it's an approach. I'll give you an example, if I may, about someone in our book who did exactly what you suggested, and I think there's an element of truth to it. I, with all due respect, it may be a bit overstated, but for instance, there's someone in our book who went to Calvin College and studied business and Mandarin, and is now teaching in China. And enjoying it very much. I would argue that that is a very fine job for someone who studied business and Mandarin in college.
Exactly. He found a job. I mean, that meets my criterion.
I think it's great. I mean, it's a woman who went to Calvin College, which is a school in Michigan, and she's teaching ESL, and that's terrific. Now, of course, to delve a little deeper into your question, though, not everybody either has those language skills or not everybody knows exactly what they want to do, and they use some of the time in college to explore. So in my answer to your question, I think you also have to look at the fact that different people mature at different times. Different people discover their interests and their talents at different times. We certainly don't want to have the government or parents or people go into hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt for people to explore their passions and to take 20 years to do so. But on the other hand, we also don't want to do it in such a way where you have to make up your mind right now when you're age 16 or 17 or 18 without giving students the opportunity to explore what it is they could like and how they could contribute to society.
Yeah, but by the time, I would agree, but by the time you're 20 or 21, it's time. It is not to say that you can't change down the road. In fact, I've heard it said that today's college graduates, you certainly cannot graduate, let's say these days, from high school at age 18 and then put in your 50 or so, well, not even 50, say your 47 years as a highly paid worker with the union benefits and then get your gold watch. That doesn't happen anymore. These days you will wind up entering several different, not just jobs in your life, but different careers. More and more people may, in fact, actually wind up freelancing. That is to say, you work for no one really but yourself, and you just sort of flit from job to job. It's not something that would appeal to me, but then again, if those are the new realities, then so be it. So, no, I would agree, and I certainly don't favor what I know used to be the European system of secondary education, and if you hadn't pretty much set a course by, let's say, the age of 11 or 12, the standardized testing there would send you in that course. You're going to be a plumber or an electrician, and you are going to Oxford, and that's the way it is, and you're stuck there. No, but as I said, by 20 or 21, you better have at least an idea. That's something you're going to try. Maybe it isn't where you'll wind up, but it's where you're going to start out. Now, is that asking too much?
No, I think that's fair. The question is how one does that for people who haven't been exposed to lots of things in the past. So let's assume you take someone who did not go to a great high school or did not have a great writing instructor or did not have a great math instructor. It's asking a lot for them all of a sudden to be so incredibly motivated that they are going to rise to the top and then come to think of all sorts of creative careers based on things that they really haven't excelled in. I think that's a little too much to ask. Well, now, is it too much to ask on the other side to have society underwriting people, you know, forever exploring? No, I think it's a fair point that you make. But there's somewhere in the middle there where we want to incentivize students to learn things that perhaps someday could contribute wildly to the world in some way. And on the other hand, be fiscally responsible.
All right, we'll come back and we'll talk some more. We'll take some more calls. 1-866-50-JIMBO. Steve Goodman, College Success Stories That Inspire. Back with more in a moment. There you go. Education is quite a process, and over the years, the decades, the centuries, the millennia, humanity has tried to refine the process. We'll take a call or two for our guest, Steve Goodman, who has written College Success Stories That Inspire. I was taken here by one on page 83 of the book, College Success Stories That Inspire. Karen Ridge, a graduate of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, sharing her college experience and how it led her to Zimbabwe and then back to North Carolina. And I'll just read some of her essay and have you comment on that, and then we'll get some calls here. I'm from a small town in the mountains of North Carolina. Growing up, our family never discussed politics or public policy. When I was accepted into the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, I had no idea my college experience would eventually steer me on a path around the globe or that my eyes would be open to dramatically different cultures and perspectives on how the world ought to function. I had a hunch of my yearnings, however, and selected a political science major that soon both pulled me out of my comfort zone while connecting me deeper into my heart. And that, I suppose, is the core of what we were just talking about, that Karen Ridge actually had an idea. Maybe she didn't have it firmly formed in her mind just precisely what it was she would wind up doing and probably couldn't envision as she writes where her career has taken her. But she had a hunch. She gave it the best shot. She picked a political science major, which sounds to me, I think, what we were both talking about, Steve.
I think you're right. I mean, and Karen's a perfect example of using the higher education system to its fullest. Here's a student from a small town in North Carolina who makes her way to the flagship school of that state and uses the resource of that very large, you know, and powerful university to find her way to different places in the world. Someone who'd never been anywhere near Zimbabwe. I think that's a perfect example of when the higher education system is working.
1-866-50-JIMBO as we take a call from Sharon, who calls in from Crane, Missouri on the Bohannon Show. Good evening, Sharon.
Good evening, Jim, and good evening to your guest. I have always wondered, what is the problem with a kid graduating from high school and then taking a year or two off and working a series of different jobs? Sometimes it's just as important to find out what you don't want to do in this life as it is to find out what you do want to do. It has a great effect of narrowing your vision as to what you would, what your passion is. And sometimes I think that really a kid going straight from high school right into college is can be detrimental to them. All they know is school. All they know is somebody else is paying the bills. It helps to get out there in the real world and find out what it's all about.
I think there is something to be said for that. And one thing, of course, that is to be said for Sharon's approach, as opposed to doing this in an academic setting, is that Sharon's approach is probably not going to set you back six figures worth of indebtedness.
Well, Sharon, I think you're right. We call that in the academic world a gap year or gap years, and I'm 100% in favor of it, and I've written extensively about my support for what you just said. In fact, not only do I agree with what you just said, I included in the book quite a few instances of people, of the importance of working even when you get to university, so that way you're actually paying some of the costs as well. One of the people in the book wrote extensively about the fact that his entire life, he is from New York City, and all he did was simply talk about working, because his family simply couldn't afford for him to go to college without working, and that was just part of his DNA, whether it was in college or not in college. Your specific question about learning about what you don't want to do, I think you're absolutely right about that as well. One can explore that while you have a job. One can explore that through an internship. One can explore that through university. One can explore that through travel. One can explore that through taking care of an elderly relative. I mean, there are any number of things that, you know, how you can discover that. But, I'm 100% with you.
All right, thank you. Appreciate your call much, Sharon. Brad calls in from Manhattan, Kansas on the Bohannon Show for our guest, Steve Goodman, the author of College Success Stories That Inspire. Good evening, Brad.
Well, Jimbo, thank you very much. And Mr. Goodman, good evening. Jimbo, first off, I want to say thank you for your service.
Thank you.
I have a success story about myself. I actually I graduated with a bachelor's in elementary education. And I also hold a master's degree in special education, but I'm no longer in the educational field. I actually got out, but I worked full time as a student going to school to help pay my way through. Took out no student loan debt, graduated, with $0 in debt. But I learned through work ethic, hard work. And now I'm a successful businessman, and I can't complain, but working and also going to school taught me the success that, the tools I needed to succeed, the drive and the ambition to do better. So I think college is great, but I think it's the work ethic that most universities are lacking now.
Well, I would be curious to hear our guest's response. I don't know that you can succeed at any school in the country without some level of work ethic. We could be talking semantic differences. Steve, your thoughts?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, the issue of drive and ambition is one that carries over in all sectors of society. Brad, I think you're right and about that. I also think you just alluded to something that I think is an important point, which is just because you study something today doesn't mean you're going to do exactly that tomorrow. Not only are there examples of that in the book, but you know that from your own life, but you probably have many friends and relatives who studied XYZ in college, but now do ABC kind of work. And I think that that's absolutely fine. To get to the issue of the work ethic a little bit more, I mean, there are all sorts of ways of learning the work ethic. Do you learn the work ethic by working in the local shop down the street and learning that you have to be on time or else you get fired if you're not on time three times in the first week, as Jim suggested before? Do you learn that through a professor? Do you learn that through some sort of training that you're getting in some institute somewhere that's, let's say, not giving you a degree? I think you can get that work ethic in any number of ways. But it also gets to the issue of how much of this is inherent. I mean, are you inherently motivated and driven? Not everybody is as driven as perhaps you are, Brad. I mean, the fact that you got your two degrees, that you are a successful business person now, and that you're taking the time to engage in this discussion means that you care about it a lot, or else you wouldn't be engaged in this discussion, which is terrific. But, not everybody is. There's somebody who cares, let's say, a little bit. And, they're part of our society, too.
More to come. 1-866-50-JIMBO. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the Jimbo Hannon Show at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-50-54626. Our guest is Steve Goodman, the author of College Success Stories That Inspire. There are some cases that we go back to the calls here, but I just wanted to take note of the fact that you you take note of mentors in this this book, that these play a role, and there were a number of cases in which mentors are important. Bruce Payne, I note here on page 124, has a story of a former teacher of his, Kerry McWilliams, who was quite a mentor.
Yes, first of all, I love the section about mentors because different people are mentored in different ways. Bruce Payne's mentor taught him, according to Bruce, how to really learn. And that's one of the things that I think it's important to mention and to emphasize, that education it's to help you get a job, yes, but it's also to help you think more broadly about things that perhaps you didn't know before. So in the case of Bruce Payne, not only was he a great mentor to many people, but he himself realized the importance of mentoring by learning from a mentor about things, about how to read and how to make insights and to develop insights that he didn't know. On yet another part of the book, or that section, I should say, there was a woman who had a mentor who told her and explained to her, and she learned about food science. So she kind of had a vague interest and understanding of nutrition and chemistry, but somehow through making some cookies and taking some chemistry courses, she ended up developing an interest in food science and developing a career in that. So, I mean, yes, it's important to have mentors, and yes, mentoring is very important, and yes, it can lead to something that's, let's say, a little more on the theoretical side, but it can also lead to something very tangible, like a new career at a job that perhaps you hadn't thought of before.
1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626, to Randy in Reading, Pennsylvania. Good evening, Randy.
Good evening, Jim, and guest. Sorry I'm late to the game, so I didn't catch everything. Mm-hmm. I just want to pass on something that I try to point out to people when they tell me that they are going to college and studying X, Y, or Z. Do not make the mistake we made. My wife finished her associate degree, transferred to a four-year college, and only in the last year started looking for a job and found out that in her discipline she could get no more than a burger flipping job without going back and getting a master's degree. And by that time we were out of money.
Well, now, how was this not pointed out to her at some point? I mean, is there no counseling at all that takes place?
I don't know. I trusted her to be pursuing it. She was Academically, she did great. She had professors that wanted her to stay on and be teaching assistants. Of course, there was no pay, and the advanced degree would the closest college was over an hour's drive away. So she could, and she graduated with honors and three minors, but she had applications and resumes out well over 100. She got about a dozen interviews, and no jobs came out of it. And the only thing I can think of is she did not look to make sure that what she was pursuing was going to be doable, and had she looked at it early enough, she could have switched majors.
All right.
There were several times when people said, oh, you're so good at X, Y, or Z, why are you studying Z, something else?
Sure. All right, I'd like our guest to comment about that, if you would, please, Steve.
Well, I'd be delighted to, and thank you for calling in, Randy. I think a lot of people are in this position where they think that something might pan out at some point, but yet it doesn't. Unfortunately, some of that is the fault of the counseling. Some of that is the fault of the student. Some of that is the fault of the job situation. Some of it is the fault of the economy. Some of it is the fault of perhaps that student should have thought about a different career to a certain extent, or a different major. I think that the question that Jim just asked you is what I would have asked as well, which is along the way, was she thinking about how that course or those sets of courses were going to yield something in the workplace? I think that's a very fair question.
Yeah, and while I guess in retrospect she should have asked the question, but certainly if you've got people who are majoring in that at some point, like maybe in the first week of the introductory course, someone should have said, if you plan on a career, you must get a master's degree. That would have been, I think, pretty helpful. More to come back in a moment. Welcome back to the Jim Bohannon Show, 1-866-50-JIMBO, as we talk to John in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Hello, John. Welcome.
Hello, Mr. Bohannon.
And what's on your mind tonight, John?
Well, I had a couple of thoughts on this topic. I'm thinking to myself here that the mentorship and the whole college pre- and post-requisite thing, I'm thinking maybe the parents should be those mentors, and maybe that should have started a long time ago.
I would agree that that is certainly the ideal solution. We should, I think, also take note, Steve, that that there are many people out there who come from homes where the parents' only qualification for being parents is the ability to reproduce.
Well, that may be true in some instances.
Yes, it certainly is true in some instances. And for those people, you can't very well expect that kind of mentoring to take place. I mean, if you're talking about a broken home or even beyond that, let's say some poor person, let's say single parent who's busting their hump with three jobs to just put food on the table and a roof over their heads, there's not a lot of time left over for mentoring, even if you mean well.
That's true, and I think that that's why mentoring is so important, and that's why that was a major section of the book. But even aside from it being a major section of the book, I think mentoring is incredibly important, whether it's on the high school side, the junior high school side, the college side, the employment side. When I'm not writing, Jim, as you know, I mean, I advise students who are applying to colleges and universities, and I think one of the key things that I try to do is be a good mentor to students to explore things that they perhaps didn't think about when they started the process. Yeah. And, John, I think that you're absolutely right that parents ought to be the best mentors that they can be, and I think we should encourage parents to be the best mentors they can be. Grandparents, aunts, uncles, friends, neighbors, why not? And if a student can get an idea from someone who's a parent, someone who's a grandparent, someone who's an uncle, I say that's great. It's great if it can happen on a college campus. It can be great if it can happen at home as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that John is certainly right for many, many students out there, but I don't think it's an answer for everybody. Jim in Springfield, Missouri. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Jim. It's kind of surprising to me that you neglected so far to mention our own hard work university down here in the Ozarks.
Well, that's true. The College of the Ozarks, a marvelous school, and of course that is a school where everybody, every single student, has some kind of paying job. And I'm not sure if there are any students at the College of the Ozarks who acquire student debt. You tell me, Jim.
Before my dad passed away, we toured the campus, and I was at the time very interested in aircraft tech, and
right.
was kind of surprised to learn that from the control tower all the way down to the maintenance shop, these guys were students with taking courses like airframe, A&P, and they were learning these terms and so forth while operating in an actual air operations environment.
Yeah. Well, that is the way that the College of the Ozarks approaches things, that every student works. And I I'm not sure that there's any student debt at the school, but their whole approach, and many of the students, not everybody, I mean, there are students who engage in just landscaping and other type of things that don't directly apply to their major, but if possible, I think most of the students there are employed in some way, Steve, that relates to their field of study.
And I support that, and as you may know, both Jims, that there are a number of other work colleges in the United States as well, where that is the main reason why the university exists. And I'm all in favor of that. But I, if I may add on to that, there are all sorts of models of education. Some people learn better with hands-on learning. I happen to personally support that. And Jim from Missouri, I actually, aren't you both from Missouri? I think that I'm in favor of hands-on learning, but there are students who don't learn as well that way, and so that's why there are other universities as well. I'm in favor of having both as educational options for students.
Fair enough. Stay on the line. We'll speak off air again. Steve Goodman is the author of College Success Stories That Inspire, and these are great stories that are told in this splendid publication that comes from Miniver Press, by the way. And I urge you to check this out if you have someone in your family, maybe you're going to college, or maybe you have a niece or a nephew, grandson, granddaughter, what have you, or you're friends with someone who is heading to school. This book could help you a lot in that process. This is Westwood One.